You're listening to the John DePietro Show. All right, let's go to some of the news of the day, starting with former President Trump now holding a commanding lead, and this is all ahead of tomorrow with the big Super Tuesday, which he should just sweep.
...of the Republican primary. Donald Trump and Nikki Haley bracing themselves for Super Tuesday.
Get everyone you know to the polls so we can trounce Haley.
This is about, do you want more of the same, or do you want to go in a new direction?
With contests in 15 states and one territory voting tomorrow, more than one-third of all GOP delegates will be up for grabs. Haley is only falling further behind Trump, interrupted by his supporters at a rally in Maine.
Trump country, remember that!
The former president winning more contests over the weekend, picking up delegates in Idaho, Michigan, and Missouri, rallying the Republican Party around him over his 91 criminal charges.
Over the past few weeks, we put on a rocket to the Republican nomination. It's been a rocket.
Haley winning over moderates, scoring her first 2024 victory in the GOP primary in Washington, D.C. And as Trump pushes to take over the RNC, Haley now saying she's no longer committing to standing by her pledge to endorse the Republican nominee.
The RNC is now not the same RNC. I think I'll make what decision I want to make.
Haley also with this warning to Republicans that Trump may not follow the Constitution if reelected.
You always want to think someone will, but I don't know. You know, when you go in and you talk about revenge, when you go and you talk about, you know, vindication, when you go and you talk about what does that mean?
Now, Colorado will be one of the states that is voting on Super Tuesday. You may remember that the state Supreme Court ruled that Donald Trump should be kicked off of the ballot because of his actions on January 6th. Well, that challenge has made its way all the way up to the U.S. Supreme Court, which could issue a decision in just a matter of hours. Regardless, Trump's name will still appear on that ballot, but it's unclear if the votes will count. George.
You know, she can try to make that argument. I mean, at this point, whether or not it's all going to prove to be successful, he's leading in all the polls against Biden. I think the big question is just that right now, it certainly seems there's no reason to believe it's going to be anything other than a rematch of 2020. I see no evidence that says it's going to be anything different than that. Now, meanwhile, someone to watch who's trying to raise her profile is Vice President Harris. I think this is very interesting now how she obviously, you know, hears the talk that the president, that President Biden is unable and that maybe they would look to, I don't believe that though, look to replace him. The Bidens, they want to move ahead. They feel that he can win. I also don't think it helps ultimately that she raises her profile. I don't think it helps, meaning the Biden campaign. And it certainly, I don't think it helps with independent voters. Nonetheless, she decides to call on and call out, I should say, a topic, an issue that has really hurt the Biden campaign.
Now, with the UN warning increasing numbers of children in Gaza are acutely malnourished, Kamala Harris calling out the Israeli government, saying it's not doing enough to alleviate a humanitarian catastrophe.
This morning, amid rising desperation in Gaza, Vice President Kamala Harris calling for an immediate ceasefire.
Given the immense scale of suffering in Gaza, there must be an immediate ceasefire.
Harris calling out the Israeli government, saying it must allow more humanitarian supplies into the Strip.
Israeli government must do more to significantly increase the flow of aid. No excuses.
The U.S. conducting its first aid airdrop into Gaza this weekend, delivering 38,000 ready-to-eat meals. Amid increasing reports of children dying from a lack of food, UNICEF warning child deaths are likely to rapidly increase unless obstacles to humanitarian relief are immediately resolved. Israeli officials say they're working to ensure the aid does not end up in the hands of Hamas.
People in Gaza right now are starving to death, and you're not letting enough aid trucks reach those people in need.
First of all, people are not starving to death in Gaza.
Well, right, the UN now says they are.
I beg to differ. At any rate, Israel is enabling thousands of trucks to get into Gaza.
Israeli troops opening fire near a convoy of aid trucks last week. More than 100 people killed, according to the Hamas-run health ministry. Israel saying its troops were threatened and most people were crushed to death in the chaos. But a UN team visiting a local hospital saying a large number of the wounded had gunshot wounds.
We have seen people with gunshot wounds, we have seen amputees, and we have seen children as young as 12 that were injured.
Well, Vice President Harris weighing in on that deadly scene around that convoy of aid trucks in Gaza, saying, quote, "We saw hungry, desperate people approach a truck simply trying to secure food for their families, and they were met with gunfire and chaos." Robin?
So much to take in there, Tom. And we also know there are new environmental concerns about that British cargo ship sunk by Houthi rebels. What can you tell us about that?
Yeah, the U.S. Navy, Robin, saying a UK-owned cargo ship carrying 21,000 tons of fertilizer, which was hit by a Houthi missile 2 weeks ago in the Red Sea, has now sunk, presenting a real environmental risk. Robin?
Appreciate it.
What a disaster. But, you know, as much as she's calling for the ceasefire, one of the things is they can't control what Hamas is going to do. And Hamas, seemingly, they have no intentions of stopping their attacks on Israel. And they all agree Israel has a right to defend itself. You know what's also an interesting story is now an arrest has been made. The death of a pregnant Amish woman found dead in her Pennsylvania home. You know, you hear about the Amish, and then when you see them, you know, it's rather odd. But and the police normally don't go into their territory, but we'd heard about this, that they were investigating, and now there's actually been an arrest.
Morning, a suspect is in custody, charged with murdering 23-year-old Rebecca Byler in Amish country. After a five-day search, 52-year-old Sean Cranson from Corry, Pennsylvania, was arrested Saturday, now charged with killing the pregnant mother and her unborn baby at her home in nearby Spartansburg.
It was crazy. I've never seen so much law enforcement at once. Never once.
Cranston facing homicide, burglary, and trespassing charges. He has not entered a plea. Police tell us they saw a red Jeep in Byler's driveway around 10 a.m. the day she died. According to a criminal complaint, Cranston has a red Jeep Patriot. Police tell us Byler's two young children were home when her body was discovered and that her husband was reportedly not there during the time of the murder, arriving home to discover her body. The close-knit religious community and surrounding town on edge for days.
Everyone's just been stunned because things like this just don't happen around here.
Cranston is currently being held without bond. And guys, we can tell you, we were here last week, we saw it then, and we are seeing it today, an outpouring of support for the Amish community as they deal with this. Robin.
So odd with the whole horse-drawn carriage. Folks, you're listening to The John DePietro Show. AJ, drywall, plaster, home improvement, call them today for a free quote. You can also find them on Facebook, 401-323-9252. 323-9252. AJ, drywall, plasters, home improvement, frame to finish basements. What a difference it'll make in your basement. Acoustic ceilings. Look how beautiful your ceiling could be. New homes, additions. Also, commercial rehabs, painting, remodeling. Contact them today. It's a family-run business. AJ, drywall, plaster, home improvements. Call for a free quote. What a difference they'll make in your home, your ceilings, floors, basements. 401-323-9252. What a difference. Beautiful walls and ceilings. 401-323-9252. You can also find them on Facebook. It's AJ Drywall, Plaster, and Home Improvements for your home or business. You're listening to The John DePietro Show. So Nikki Haley, still in the race. She appeared on Meet the Press. Let's hear some cuts. One of the things she was asked about, is about President Trump's actions on January 6th. Let's go to the sound of Nikki Haley on Meet the
January
Press.
January 6th, that's been in the headlines again because the Supreme Court has now said it is going to take up the immunity case as it relates to former President Trump. As you may recall, Senate Minority Leader Mitch McConnell, who said he's now leaving his leadership post, said that Donald Trump was, quote, practically and morally responsible for January 6th for the attack on the Capitol. Without weighing into the legality, do you agree with Mitch McConnell? Was Donald Trump practically and morally responsible?
Well, first of all, I think if you look at what happened on January 6th, I have said it was a terrible day. It is not a beautiful day. But I've also, you know, I look at the fact that you had a lot of Americans going out there doing what we're blessed in this country to do, freedom of speech, freedom to say what they want to say. What went terribly wrong is the fact that we saw complete lawlessness going into the Capitol. And what Trump's role is not that he had the rally in the first place. That's what we do in America. The problem is when he had the opportunity to stop it, you know, you have everybody from Fox News anchors to friends to family begging him to say something to get them to stop, including his vice president. And he was silent. And he didn't say anything. So it was like, why did you allow it to happen? Because when a leader sees something that goes wrong, you use the power of your voice to make it right. That's what's the question is, where was he? Why didn't he do it? Those are the questions he's going to have to answer.
So, Ambassador, just going back to my question, yes or no, is he practically and morally responsible, as Mitch McConnell
says? We're going to find out.
But do you think he is? What do you think? You're
right. I think he should have said something earlier. I think he should have stopped it when it started.
Is that
a
yes?
I think he should have. It's what I'm saying. I am telling you, having the rally was not a crime. To turn around and not stop people from breaking the law when he had the opportunity to do that is questionable. And that's what I think the courts are going to have to play with and figure out how they're going to do it. I'm not a lawyer. I'm not going to try and play in that. I've told you what I think in terms of the fact that anytime there is lawlessness, yeah, and you condone lawlessness and you don't do anything to stop lawlessness, he's going to have to answer for that.
You know, do you hear anyone? She has to answer the questions put to her, meaning that's Nikki Haley. Do you hear anyone talking about January 6th? It's only places like Meet the Press, This Week, that type of media, anyone's even talking about it. With everything going on right now in the country, and there's a lot of things going wrong, do you hear anyone reasonable, I should say? I would love to see a poll how, all right, let's take Republicans out of the mix. Let's even take Democrats out of the mix. I'd love to see a poll on what independent voters, if they're concerned about January 6th. I don't think so. The lawlessness that's going on is going on at the border right now. So now, Nikki Haley, again, on Meet the Press, talking about, she says she doesn't feel bound by the pledge that she took, which was to support whoever the nominee was.
The prospect, the possibility of endorsing him off the table at this point?
It's not anything I think about. What I have
but
said
is it off the table, Ambassador? It sounds like you are in a different place. Are people misinterpreting what you're saying? Have you moved to a place where you're no longer planning to endorse him?
Well, I think, first of all, if you talk about an endorsement, you're talking about a loss. I don't think like that. When you're in a race, you don't think about losing. You think about continuing to go forward. What I can tell you is I don't think Donald Trump or Joe Biden should be president. I don't think that we need two candidates in their 80s. I don't think we want a Joe Biden who calls his opponents fascists or a Donald Trump who calls his opponents vermin. No one wants that. I think people want a new generational leader that is going to go back to what the American dream is, what we want for our kids, in a place that's something that we can be proud of again.
Let me try it this way. You did sign a pledge, an RNC pledge, yeah, to support the eventual nominee. Do you still feel bound by that pledge?
I have always said that I have serious concerns about Donald Trump. I have even more concerns about Joe Biden.
So is that a no? Are you bound by the RNC pledge?
The RNC pledge, I mean, at the time of the debate, we had to take it to where would you support the nominee? And you had to, in order to get on that debate stage, you said yes. The RNC is now not the same RNC. Now it's
so you're no
Trump's
longer bound by that pledge.
No, I think I'll make what decision I want to make, but that's not something I'm thinking about. And I think that while y'all think about that, I'm looking at the fact that we had thousands of people in Virginia. We're headed to North Carolina. We're going to continue to go to Vermont and Maine and all these states to go and show people that there is a path forward. And so I don't look at what ifs. I look at how do we continue the conversation.
Now, a couple things about that. I think she's playing for 28. I think she's playing for 28. This business of endorsing him, she's not going to be the VP selection for him. So there really seemingly is no benefit to endorsing President Trump. Not that I don't even think, I don't think he likes the fact that she's still in the race, but I don't think anyone is holding out that if she's going to endorse him. I think what's interesting is what is the Republican Party and where is this going with the Republican Party? Because make no mistake about it, Super Tuesday, she's going to get buried. Let's pick up Steve Kornacki of NBC. I mean, President Trump is, it's like not even close. So this business of, so giving them endorsement isn't important.
Assuming that Nikki Haley does not pull off the mother of all political miracles on Tuesday, because right now, here's the Republican race. You see the delegate count, Trump by a 10-1 margin, leading Nikki Haley. And you see what's going to come up Tuesday. Let me call those up. These are all the states and all the results we've had so far. But let's call up the big one, Super Tuesday here, and just take a look at this map. And I think you'll see the challenge Haley faces. Here's all the states. And, you know, you start. It's the map and it's the rules. California, you would think, is a great state for Nikki Haley. Closed primary. Independents can't vote. Democrats can't vote. And it's winner take all. If Trump just gets 50% plus one, he gets all 169 delegates out of California. A lot of states that are like that. Alabama's essentially a winner take all. Arkansas is essentially a winner take all here. Texas is at the statewide level, essentially winner take all as well. They also give out votes by congressional district. But if you look at those districts, they really look friendly to Trump. The bottom line for Nikki Haley, when you look at this map, 40% is not going to cut it. Unless she's winning states, winning multiple states on Tuesday, she's going to get buried in a delegate avalanche, Kristen.
She's not going to. Nothing's going to change the dynamic. Right now, it is a Biden-Trump rematch. Period. End of story. Doesn't matter what people seemingly wish it was some other scenario. That's what's happening. She's not going to stop him. He's the nominee. Period. You're listening to the John DePietro Show. AEP Services, they take great pride installing fences of all kinds, vinyl, wood, aluminum, chain link, experience, quality, integrity. Call AEP Services today for a quality fence, home or business, 401-228-7190, 401-228-7190, residential fence, commercial fence, steel, wood guard, rail. They have it all. Beautiful aluminum product, decorative landscape. It adds a lot to it for your stunning property. Call the experts today, AEP Services, 401-228-7190. Residential or commercial, why not enjoy your backyard, a little privacy, or maybe keep a pet or young children inside? Remember, they also have fences. They're resilient, water-resistant. Call today, 401-228-7190. 7190, free quote, AEP Services, the fence experts, 401-228-7190. You're listening to the John DePietro Show. I hear different people say that Gavin Newsom's going to be the actual nominee, that the latest one now, there was even an opinion piece in the New York Post. Michelle Obama, look out for Michelle Obama. There's a good, better piece. A lot of people that are posting this, they either don't know how the system works or they're leaving out what I would say is crucial information. Now, someone who's very plugged in, very respected reporter, my opinion, Peter Baker of the New York Times. And he has a piece for Democrats pining for an alternative. Biden team has a message. Get over it. A new poll shows nearly 2 in 5 say the president should not be the nominee, but no one who matters to the president seems willing to suggest he step aside, or maybe he's not listening. When it comes down to it, a lot of Democrats wish President Biden were not running. Only 28% of Democrats, new survey, New York Times, expressed enthusiasm about his candidacy. 38% said flatly Biden should not be the nominee. Now, again, these are Democrats, but even as many Democrats, both D.C. and around the country, quietly pine for someone else take on President Trump. who leads nationwide in the polls by 5 percentage points. No one who matters seems willing to tell that to Biden himself. Or if they are, he does not appear to be listening. Surrounded by a loyal, devoted inner circle, which he does have, Biden has given no indication he would consider stepping aside. None. To let someone else lead the party. Indeed, he and the people close to him bristle at the notion. For all the hand-wringing, the president advisors note no serious challenge has emerged, and Biden has dominated the early Democrat primaries even more decisively than Trump has won his own party's nominating contest. The Biden team views the very question as absurd. The president, in their view, has an impressive record of accomplishments to run on. There's no obvious alternative. Far too late in the circle to bow out without considerable disruption. If he were ever to have opted against a second term, it probably would have been a year ago, Peter Baker writes, when there would have been a time for a successor to emerge. Other than someone with Biden in the name, it's hard to imagine who would have enough influence to even broach the idea with him, much less sway him. There's no council of elders, and I'm not sure if there was, that an incumbent president, no matter who it was, would listen to him, said David Plouffe. That was the President Obama's campaign architect, one of the strategists who helped him pick Biden. He thinks, hey, talking about Biden now, hey, I won. I beat the guy who's going to run against me. I can do it again. Members of Biden's team insist they feel little sense of concern. The president's closest aides push back against those questioning his decision to run and dismiss polls as meaningless this far before the vote. They argue doubters constantly underestimate Biden, and the Democrats have won or outperformed expectations in 2018, 2020, 2022, 2023, even a special House election this year. Actual voter behavior tells us a lot more than any poll does, and it tells a very clear story. Joe Biden and Democrats continue to outperform while Trump and the party he leads are weak, cash-strapped, and deeply divided, said Michael Tyler, Biden's campaign communications director. Our campaign is ignoring the noise and running a strong campaign, just like we did in 2020. Now, outside the White House, though, many Democrats wish that the no-panic White House would exhibit some urgency. Biden's weakness in polls, especially those showing him trailing on the half-dozen swing states necessary to assemble an electorate, have generated widespread anxiety. Some privately say Georgia, Arizona may be out of reach, requiring Biden to sweep Michigan, Wisconsin, Pennsylvania. The discontent is not necessarily a judgment on the merits of his presidency. Many Democrats say, you know, he's done a good job on many fronts, winding down the pandemic, managing wars in Europe, the Middle East. But his support has been undercut by concerns about his age, his support for Israel's war on Hamas, and the record influx of migrants at the southwest border, and the lingering effects of inflation. More than 100,000 Democrats in Michigan cast votes for uncommitted, mostly over Gaza. Biden, 81, is just a little older than Trump, who's 77. And then they continue to say that he's fit for office. But here's the part that I think gets interesting, is the alternative scenario remains far-fetched. Long-shot challenger, Representative Dean Phillips of Minnesota, has gotten no traction. Super Tuesday coming up. Too late for a more heavyweight candidate to jump in. Now, this is, again, Michael Baker, Peter Baker in the New York Times. Who is very, very knowledgeable. I think he's a tremendous reporter, if not probably Peter Baker is one of the best reporters out there right now. But getting back to, so then he goes on to say that the latest dinner table conversation in Washington would be what happens if he changes his mind at the last minute, the way LBJ did in 68, or experience a health situation that prompts him to drop out. If that happened before the DNC in August, National Convention, it would set the stage for the first open competition at a convention in decades. After the convention, any vacancy at the top of the ticket would be filled by the DNC, Democrat National Committee. Now, all the talk, though, is just that. Biden's helped by the fact that no one from the next generation of Democrats Harris, Newsom, Gretchen Whitmer has a national proven track record. So now I think they also touch on this theory that maybe Michelle Obama, the notion that he goes on to write, the notion that someone outside his family could talk Biden into stepping aside has always been a fanciful one. There are a few Democrats with the kind of gravitas that might mean something to Biden. And listen to this. He still feels sore that Mr. Obama gently pushed him not to run in 2016, deferring to Hillary Clinton, went on to lose to Trump. Biden's old enough to have no mentors left and few peers from his Senate days, and Jill Biden and other family members strongly support this final run. There were only two people who could prevent Joe Biden from being the nominee. Joe Biden, if he decides not to run, or someone serious who would challenge him. No matter how appealing a younger Democrat may seem in theory, the political graveyard is full of people who look good on paper. So in the Michelle Obama, that is I think it's just total misnomer that he would step aside for her. He is angry and feels, he and the family, they feel if he had run in 2016, he could have beaten Trump in 2016 instead of Hillary lost to him. So the idea that he would then step aside for Michelle Obama, I've never believed that. There's no evidence of that. She has shown no interest in running. Her husband was the political one, not her. So therefore, just to put a period in this, it's going to be Biden. Ignore some of these fake rumors. Folks, you're listening to The John DePietro Show. Propane Plus. Call them today. Heating and cooling in Rhode Island, 401-885-4209. In Massachusetts, 508-252-3359 for Propane Plus. Three generations you can always depend on Propane Plus for all your heating and cooling. Call them today, 401-885-4209. Three generations, they're available 24/7 for service and delivery, and they're going to serve you for a very long time. They have a great user-friendly website. You just log on at propaneplus.com, and then you type in your zip code, residential, commercial, Propane Plus, heating and cooling, always there for you. Give them a call today. In Rhode Island, 401-885-4209. In Massachusetts, 508-252-3359. The Johnson family, three generations, heating and cooling. You can always depend on Propane Plus. You're listening to The John DePietro Show. I want to go to Face the Nation. I was a big fan of Meet the Press. I don't know what it is. Kristen Welker, I don't think she's that strong. I wasn't a huge fan of Chuck Todd either. But I want to go to, it is interesting that now the Democrats are starting to go after President Trump, saying that he's slipping a little bit. And he does make mistakes. I just think he tries to freelance things, so to speak, a little bit. Free rift. He just goes off script at some of his rallies. But I wanna play this. He does seem to mix up quite a bit. There seems to be a pattern. President Trump keeps mixing it up, President Biden and President Obama. Sarah Palin, in the book Game Change, they say that Sarah Palin kept calling, because she had to debate Joe Biden, she kept calling him O'Biden. So that's why then they said, just call him Joe. Before the debate, go up and ask him, can I call you Joe? So, but she kept calling him O'Biden for whatever reason. Biden, Obama. And President Trump also seems to kind of mix them up for whatever reason. Let me play some of this.
You said last night at a rally in Richmond about Vladimir Putin.
Putin, has so little respect for Obama that he's starting to throw around the nuclear word, Terry. You heard that, nuclear. He's starting to talk nuclear weapons today. I was waiting for that to happen. But we have a fool as a president. He said, we will never leave until there is complete and total victory. And we might be there for a long time.
I know you have endorsed Mr. Trump. He seemed there to confuse Biden for Obama. He also suggested that there were U.S. troops serving in Ukraine. Are you comfortable about his mental fitness?
Yes, yes. Compared to the current president, 110%. And as your polling shows, I think the American people have real concerns where President Biden is with regard to his fitness for office, particularly his mental acuity, and relative to President Biden, or relative to former President Trump. I don't even think it's a close call when you see the two in action.
But to be clear, there are no U.S. troops serving on the battlefield in Ukraine. There are military advisors. There aren't troops, correct?
No, but I mean, look, I mean, the other thing that...
Okay, because some within your party believe that. And
well,
that was
I would go back to who is demonstrating more mental fitness to be the president. And I don't even think it's a close call between President Trump and President Biden right now.
I agree. I think, you know, you're traveling, you're doing these rallies. I would just suggest, that's Senator Dan Sullivan, by the way. He's a senator from Alaska. I think President Trump, when he goes off script, they prepare for him what, you know, they want him to say. I think he might be better off if he just sticks to that. Now, ATF director showed Mark, and this is the host of Face the Nation, who, again, I think Margaret Brennan, I think she's solid. I think she does a good job, but they were showing her some of the examples of some of the weapons that law enforcement has to deal with that are out on the streets, and it's
government,
pretty frightening.
This is a fully automatic weapon, right, that is made, and you can see it right here, restricted law enforcement government use only. This is a machine gun that soldiers and law enforcement officers are allowed to have, right? Same gun here, except this one isn't fully automatic. So, right? So there's nothing on here that says
right.
Only law enforcement. Aha. Until this thing comes along. This one little piece of plastic turns this weapon functionally to do the things that a fully automatic
bump
weapon
stock.
Be, fully automatic weapon. And so now, but a do-it-yourselfer can who's not in the law enforcement community, mm-hmm. who's not in the military, can break the law.
You know, that is really frightening when you think about it. It's the bump stock. It was the thing that nutcase used out in Las Vegas with that shooting. Now, ATF responds, social media claiming that the ATF is making it easier for people who enter the U.S. illegally to obtain firearms, and then link the recent killing of that nursing student in Georgia. So I want to play. The director is saying that it is not true. But
I want you to clarify something, if you would. So there's this claim that's apparently gone viral online that the ATF has changed policies and made it easier for people who entered this country illegally to purchase firearms, and that is being linked to a recent death in the state of Georgia. Can you explain what the ATF policy actually is? Because an ATF spokesperson did say there are limited exceptions for people who are here illegally to buy firearms.
No, so
what does that mean?
No, so I don't know. I'm not familiar with the ATF statement. I'm not familiar with the online virility, the viral thing that's happened. I'm familiar with the law,
mm-hmm.
right? And the law has not changed, nor has ATF policy changed at all on this. And so so in order to purchase a firearm, right, an American citizen, so long as they're not otherwise prohibited or a green card holder, right, or, you know, basically somebody here on a non-immigrant visa, mm-hmm. right? But I'm not going to go through every part of the statute. The statute sets that out. Nothing has changed. Nothing is changing on that front.
Mm-hmm.
So I can't, it's hard for me to respond. I think I saw one thing out there that the AP had sort of fact-checked and
yes.
I read that article and said it was false.
Yes.
The AP is correct. It is false. There's been no change. The law is the law, remains the law.
You know, it's interesting, these certain exceptions. We're hearing that. I'm hearing that from people in Rhode Island, that Governor McKee is saying that there are certain exceptions that he could see that someone that's in the state illegally, that they should be allowed to purchase a firearm. And I want to be very clear. I mean, I am 100% fundamentally against that. They shouldn't even be here, let alone purchasing a firearm. But Governor McKee, as many of you know, he does try to kind of thread the needle, walk the line a little bit. He did a recent interview, and he was being asked about his own law enforcement and the state police. And all he kept saying was, I want them to follow the law. And, you know, when you're dealing with people here illegally, you got to weigh the Constitution. I don't know what he's talking about. If they followed the law, they'd be deported. And if you're in the country or the state illegally, the Constitution applies to American citizens. The Constitution doesn't apply to people who are not supposed to be here in the first place. So I don't know what he's talking about, and I don't think there should be any exceptions to the law either. Folks, you're listening to The John DePietro Show. A great meal, a great time is waiting for you at the Cohasset Inn. Rhode Island tradition since 1977, 226 Cohasset Avenue, West Warwick. They have a large dining room, perfect, maybe a group, maybe a collation, lunch. The Cohasset Inn, getting a big group together, or maybe just you alone, or a date. 226 Cohasset Avenue, West Warwick. Great staff, terrific food. They're always working on the menu. And they also have a nice lounge as well. You have the market at Cohasset right there. They're open 7 days a week. I'll see you for a great meal. Make it the Cohasset Inn. You're listening to The John DePietro Show. Let's go to some of the Sunday morning television show highlights, starting with this week. Nikki Haley still got 20% of the vote. She still has money, and she's still in the race.
We're talking about Trump and Biden, but there is Super Tuesday. So I want to read something Frank Bruni wrote in the New York Times, kind of summing up where we are about Nikki Haley. In her unbroken string of Republican primary losses, she may be creating a win-win. It's Biden-Trump in November, and Biden beats Trump. Haley gets to say to Republicans, I told you so. If Trump wins, moves back into the White House, and sucks us into a nonstop democracy-imperiling quasi-autocratic melodrama, Haley also gets to say, I told you so.
Well, the thing about Haley continuing to be in this race is it is showing that the Republican Party is also quite divided. Nikki Haley in Michigan still got 27% of the vote, despite spending hardly any money there and not really campaigning there. And it's showing that Donald Trump, just like President Biden, has problems with voters, Republican and Biden, Democratic.
I think the way the party is set, that I don't think that's a fair criticism of President Trump. And he is, even in the Republican Party, considered a divisive figure. So I'm not convinced that that really shows problems for him. Let's go to Politico's Jonathan Martin talking about President Biden paying a price simply because he was just way too slow at the border.
Got to start with the trip to the border. Yes. Biden and Trump there at the same time. Did Biden do anything with this trip to neutralize what is an issue that has been killing him?
In the short term, no, but he checked off something that he should have done probably 6 to 8 months ago. Look, this has been an obvious challenge for him and for his party for some time now. I think Biden was slow to realize that. To his credit, they tried to address this, obviously, in the Congress before Donald Trump killed the compromise bill in the Senate. But I think Biden's paying a price because he was too slow on the issue. Look, he was warned by his pollster in the first year of his White House that inflation, immigration, and crime were rising issues with the voters. Yeah. And they were slow on all three, but immigration's the one that's been most damaging, I think, in the last couple of months.
I think that's right. You know, I also think it's too late. I think if President Biden goes out on the campaign trail and starts talking about the border and starts talking about that he's trying to revise the, you know, save the board, I don't think it flies. I don't think people see it that way. So I don't think it helps him really in any way. Now, I also want to go to Bill Maher, who I like it. He had Dr. Phil on, but I think this is interesting, one of his guests talking about the situation
really
in Michigan.
To put this narrative out there that Biden is going to lose
Newsweek.
Michigan over Gaza, when the truth is he's going to lose Michigan over 600,000 auto workers because his EV market was extremely punishing to auto workers. And like we said earlier, there's been this big realignment where working class Americans are very, very, very much on the Trump train, people who used to be Democrats and used to vote for Democrats. And rather than admit that, this outrage that Democrats lost the working class vote and try to figure out how we can appeal to them again, they're looking for excuses and other things to blame, like, oh, this war in Gaza, or they'll call them deplorables, or they'll call them racists, you know, because they don't want to admit that Trump has picked up a lot of the policies that used to be Democratic policies in the 90s, like controlling the border, for example. The idea that an open border and mass migration is extremely punishing to the working class. It drives down their wages. It's class warfare against the working class. It is an upward transfer of wealth from the working class who end up competing with immigrants to the elites who end up employing them, and now they can employ cheap immigrants instead of having to pay working class Americans a living wage.
You know, that is, again, she's an editor with Newsweek. I haven't heard anyone make that argument, thread the needle, so to speak, in that way. I think she did it very, very effectively, and I completely agree with that, as a matter of fact. And Bill Maher, he did his monologue saying that President Biden walks like a toddler with a full diaper and is even at this point mocking the way that he walks. Now, Jonathan Carl also of This Week talked about the very powerful display of the funeral that took place in Moscow. And I want to play some of that.
On the powerful display of dissent and courage that we've seen over the past 48 hours in Moscow, where tens of thousands of Russians have come out to honor the memory and the mission of Russian opposition leader Alexei Navalny. Navalny was buried Friday, exactly 2 weeks after his sudden death at a remote Arctic penal colony. The people you see here turned out despite the menacing security and despite the threat of arrest. At one point, the line to his grave stretched over a mile long. Navalny's mother and father were there. His wife and two children who live abroad couldn't go. It's just not safe for them to enter Russia. Navalny's funeral comes less than 3 weeks before Putin is set to win yet another six-year term in an election that is anything but free and fair. Navalny represented a hope for a brighter, freer future for his country, a hope those honoring him this weekend in Moscow have not given up on. As we bid farewell this Sunday, we too remember Alexei Navalny and all he represented.
That is really remarkable. And look at how much time, all of the death and destruction. And Putin right now seems stronger than ever. He's not going anywhere. And look at how he's waiting to see how this election is going to flesh out. More and more people seem to give the impression that it's going to be up to our NATO allies to do anything to stop him, because there seems to be more of a feeling that we need to, it's the America First movement, that we need to protect America first. We need to take care of Americans. I'll say this, President Biden, they have no one to blame but themselves for the mood they've created. This situation with the border, this is insanity, the open border. And with that said, Governor McKee can do all these semantics of he's not sure of Providence. Everyone's focusing on his Providence sanctuary city. Let me answer that for you. Providence operates no differently than any other city or town in the state. I don't know why everyone focuses on Providence. They don't operate, their police don't operate any differently than Pawtucket or Central Falls or anyone else for that matter. So, and Governor McKee can say all he wants that, no, we're not a sanctuary state, but no one believes him. All his policies speak to something very, very different. You're listening to The John DePietro Show. All your oil needs, make it Henry Oil. Call Henry Oil today, 401 521-0200. Reliable, affordable fuel oil delivery. Call Henry Oil today. Fuel oil, diesel, gasoline delivery. It's Henry Oil, residential, commercial, fuel oil delivery since 1947. They also have budget plans, service contracts, lock and cap pricing. You can depend on Henry Oil. Call them today, 401-521-0200. Serving most of Rhode Island and southeastern Mass. We got a long way to go with winter. Make sure that tank is filled. Call Henry Oil today. 401-521-0200. Henry Oil, a local family-run business since 1947 that you can depend on. For all your oil needs, call Henry Oil today. 401-521-0200. You're listening to the John DePietro Show. Let's go to some of the highlights. President Trump, his rally over the course of the weekend, getting ready for the next set of primaries coming up on Tuesday. This is where he is talking about Fannie Willis. Here we go.
And her lover, Nathan Wade. And they hired him for almost $1 million because of his great, great experience. Of course, he didn't have any experience. He had experience in something else. You know that. A lot of experience.
He wasn't wrong. There was no reason to have that guy. That is a joke. And she's going to have to be removed. Now, President Trump talks about leader of the Taliban.
Telling our soldiers, don't do it anymore because terror will rain down on you. And he called you, yes, your highness. He called me your highness, which is interesting. But he said, yes, I understand.
I think more people are realizing that things were certainly more under, without question, more under control. Everything was. So, and a big, big crowd. And he's obviously going to have a huge, huge day coming up, without question, on Tuesday. I think right now, all of the polls are showing that President Trump, he's not just doing okay. He's doing, you know, he's dominating and he's leading in a lot of key states over President Biden. So I think right now the talk about, number one, that Biden is going to be replaced. I don't see that. I don't believe that. I don't know why they would. He and the First Lady, Jill Biden, would have to say that they've decided, and it would have to, I would think at this point, it would have to be health related. If he had perhaps, you know, something very, very serious, like a stroke, if he was hospitalized. But other than that, he's not going anywhere. And the power that he has right now, I don't see why Biden would step aside, because he's about to get all the delegates. Now, let's go back to the rally. President Trump talking about Biden's brother, James.
University of Pennsylvania. I went there. The Wharton School of Finance is great. I went there. So, Penn, they give them hundreds of millions of dollars, and Biden gets paid a lot of money by the Chinese. I'm glad that Republicans in Congress are going after the massive Biden crime family corruption. I give them a lot of credit. In particular, they're going after crooked Joe Biden.
Crooked Joe.
I hope they keep doing it, because he's illegally after me with the DOJ in coordination with the district attorneys and attorney generals in the states. It's not just them. We have, as an example, Fawny and her lover, Nathan Wade, in Georgia. Letitia James, Judge Engoron and Merchant in New York State. Alvin Bragg, the DA, and his puppet master from the DOJ. Think of it. Biden put his top guy, one of his top guys in the DOJ, into the DA's office in Manhattan.
You're listening to the John DePietro Show. Folks, I always tout our website just because it has exclusive stories and video. It has links to on-the-scene live stream. Remember, there's no vowel I. It's DePietro.com, DePietro.com. You can also reach me that way if you'd like to get in touch with me. DePietro.com. Log on, and then links to Facebook and YouTube. Everything we have, it's all waiting for you right there at the website. You're listening to the John DePietro Show. Well, folks, again, as we are now in March, this bridge situation still continues. A lot of unknowns. Still unsure where this is going to go, how long it's going to take. Doesn't seem to me like they have a good handle on it. If anything, it strikes me that Governor McKee, it's as if he almost wants to move on from it. And you can't move on from it. But another thing involving the governor is I think people should be very concerned at his evasiveness when it comes to not only the situation with the bridge, but specifically the situation with illegals, the fact that when Governor McKee says, oh, you know, we're not a sanctuary state, and oh, and I have our troopers, they follow the law, but they're actually not following the law. And he'll say, well, they have to follow the Constitution. Well, if you are stopping someone and arresting someone who's not even a citizen, the Constitution doesn't apply to those individuals. There are people, there's so many of them, they overstay their visa, and word gets out that if you come to Rhode Island, you're not going to be hassled. So it would only make sense that then we end up with a lot of people that are in the country illegally, that many of them, so many of them, are in need of state services and government services. The other misnomer that is out there is this business that, well, maybe Providence is a sanctuary city. As if the police in Providence treat people that are not supposed to be here any differently, and I'm telling you that they don't. So there seems to be some of the law is ambiguous. How Rhode Island implements it is ambiguous. They try to treat it that it's ICE's fault for anything that happens or falls through the cracks. But the fact of the matter is, you don't hear Governor McKee take a firm stand. You don't hear Governor McKee, you know, take action. You don't hear Governor McKee basically, you know, assert authority when it comes to this. He seems very content to step back and just try to point fingers, point blame. And I think you also have to look at, it's more of what the evidence says as opposed to what he's saying. He can say all he wants of, oh, well, you know, we're not a sanctuary state and we have to follow the law. Well, they're not following the law. And it is a dictate. And he could easily override that what Chafee did in 2014, which essentially said that the ACI no longer cooperates with ICE and these ICE detainers. So I find Governor McKee and almost like that he's the governor and he seems unclear on what the state policies are. I frankly don't find it credible. You're listening to the John DePietro Show.